Blog Talk Radio.
Rename cheese! Rename cheese!
Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz Podcast, your weekly source for women's American football, insights, game recaps, and NFL news weekly. Subscribe on Apple and iHeart.
Welcome to Gridiron Blitz, episode 446, Mother's Day edition of the Gridiron Blitz, right here on Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, and anywhere else you get your podcast. Thanks to everybody for subscribing to our podcast. Also, thanks to Zazzle for the sponsorship of the podcast. You can go to zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. You can get 15% off daily, worldwide shipping as well on t-shirts, hoodies, and leggings, plus other exciting gifts like Marvel and Disney. So check out our sponsor, Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties, and check out the good deals right there, including worldwide shipping. All right, we're going to have a great show today, 2 hours jam-packed, exciting 2 hours. As the first hour, we're going to dive into the international scene, which we didn't do last week. If you missed our podcast last week, you get an exciting interview with Mary Woodward and Coach Brian Wiggins of the Houston Energy. So you can go back and replay 445. Also, if you missed any of our previous podcasts from the beginning of the season, 436, that was Grace Cooper, the Denver Bandits, plus Coach Soho of the Houston Mambas, as well as you got 438, that was Leilani Kamal, Lewis Cook, and Ambra Marcucci as well, 433, Michelle Angel, and then 430, Lindsay Cash. So check out the previous podcasts on your favorite platform, Spreaker, Apple, Spotify, Google Cast, or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Cool 5-star review helps us out to bring attention to women's tackle football, especially on the congested podcast rankings, which is full of American football, NFL, and everything else. So it kind of clutters it. We need to get to the top. Obviously, a 5-star rating on each platform helps us out weekly as well. So invite your friends to give us a weekly 5-star rating if you think it's worth it. We appreciate that. We work our butts off every week to bring you the best information in terms of covering the sport, in terms of the two major leagues in the world, the WNFC and WFA. So we're really proud of that, and the crew itself here is very proud of that too. So we're going to dive into the talented Taylor Hay in about 15 minutes of the St. Louis Slam, the undefeated 3-0 St. Louis Slam of the WFA Pro. So we'll dive into her about this season and how the hot start here. Looking to see them in Canton. The ideal picture for them would be to win on the left coast and to meet up with the monster that is the Boston Renegades in the final. So that is the dream matchup of dream matchups for all of us to see. We were supposed to have that matchup during COVID, during the 2020 season, I believe, in-season battle, and did not happen. So if St. Louis does run the table and gets to Canton and makes the playoffs, and hopefully Massey doesn't snuff them of the playoffs, which happened last year, you know, they will be able to maybe show up and meet Boston, which is the ideal scenario right now. So we don't know what will happen in about 6 weeks from today, but as it stands right now, Taylor Hay and the St. Louis Slam on a trajectory to be in Canton and maybe go up against the Boston Renegades. Well, that would be a very exciting matchup. All right, guys. So let's dive into the international scene, which we didn't do last week, and I know we kind of briefly talked about it, but there is action overseas in Europe, to be precise, and that would be in Sweden, week one, Norrköping versus Linham. It was a great outing, first week, week one, Norrköping Panthers 27-0 over the Griffins. You got Copenhagen Raptors, the new-look Raptors, taking on Vestera Roosters. 44-6 was the victory there in week one. AIK versus Karlstad, 55-0. They get routed by the champions. And then Vålerenga Trolls, they get routed as well by the Göteborg Marbles, 46-0. So week two, as it stands right now, last weekend, the Griffins versus AIK. Griffins rebound after that loss in week one, 16-12. They rebound against AIK. Then you got Karlstad Crusaders still on the trajectory. Offensive routing of Vasteras, 68-0. So at this point, Karlstad not missing a beat from last year, still the team to beat, probably the best team in the Swedish Dam League at that point. I don't think anybody's really going to be competing there until the final, and we'll see who's going to match up with the finals, but it's kind of early, week two. Norrköping versus Göteborg, and Norrköping obviously falls to Göteborg. Göteborg 20-0. So they are 2-0 on the season as well, and they are going to meet up with, I believe, Karlstad at some point here, but they got to go through Copenhagen in week three. So it's a battle of 2-0 Copenhagen taking on Göteborg Marbles 1-0. So that'll be an interesting matchup here coming up week three. Vålerenga versus Copenhagen 50-0 was a score, and they put up points here. So can it's going to be a battle of two offensive firepower. Göteborg 46-0 in the first game. We'll see how they fare against Copenhagen. Copenhagen only allowed one touchdown so far in their first matchup and none in week two. So interesting matchups coming up in week three in terms of the Swedish Women's League. Västerås will take on Lingham 0-1, 1-1. Copenhagen 2-0, taking on Göteborg 1-0. AIK 0-2, looking for a first win against Norrköping, which is 1-1. So an interesting scenario there in week three. So we'll see who stays undefeated. Karlstad, it has the bye in week three. So that's going to be interesting to see whether Copenhagen is going to be actually Göteborg or Copenhagen. One of the two are going to be the actual challengers to the Karlstad Crusaders in terms of this season. So we'll set that out. Over in Finland, week one, the champion Turku Trojans 25-6 over Helsinki Wolverines. Not much of a contest there. First quarter was a pretty good deal for them. 0-0 score, and then all of a sudden, Turkey Trojans get going. 13-0 in the second quarter, 6-0 in the third. And Helsinki could only muster one score in the fourth. So that was a 25-6 victory for the Turku Trojans, who are the defending champs in Finland, looking, I believe, for a third consecutive championship. So that's interesting to see if they're going to be able to take care of business this year, and that will be four in a row. Really good matchups there. In Finland, the change of the series was originally it was supposed to be two different teams, but it ended up being just a four-team series. And so interesting to see how that's going to fare in terms of how they're going to fare. So Northern Lights will take on Helsinki Wolverines at this point. And we'll see how they go in terms of the matchup. So Helsinki, kind of a makeshift from a couple of the teams. So what happened is the reality in the Finland season, some teams collapsed, were not able to field enough rosters. So because of injury and because of injuries, and those are going to happen, the teams are not able to fill a full roster of 30 or more. So it became a situation where they ended up scaling back to just having four teams in the Division 1 in the Maple League. So it's Northern Lights was the one that replaced the other teams that were not going to be there. Northern Lights was Division 2 champ. So Northern Lights will play with Helsinki Wolverines, Turku Trojans, and Tampere Saints. So week two, Northern Lights will face Helsinki, first matchup of the year for them in the Maple League. Turku Trojans against Tampere Saints. That's going to be a very important matchup there. So we'll see who... if Tampere can step up their game and be competitive against the champs, and then we'll see the first matchup, Helsinki versus Northern Lights at this point. So interesting matchups coming up here in week two. Mother's Day weekend over in Finland as well. We'll go over to Canada, the WWCFL week one. Calgary off the blocks week one, 33-14 over their rivals, Edmonton Storm. Really good outing there, high-powered offense. Very good news for them. From what I read, they obviously were able to recruit very well in terms of the Alberta swing. And so the numbers are up in Calgary. So that's an impressive bunch. They're able to field at least over 40 players at this point. So that makes a big difference in terms of quality of play and on-field quality of play, as we talked about before, especially here in the States where WFA Pro requirement is above 45, where the WNFC also requires above 45 because it's necessary to feel that normal NFL teams are at 53-man rosters for a reason, because obviously there's going to be injuries that happen And so that's the same thing in the women's game, but that level of roster size has to be elevated if you want to be competitive and if you want to stay competitive in that sense. Week two, off the blocks here, it was Calgary again, 42-0, taking care of Lethbridge Steel. Really, really high-powered offense. Like I said, Calgary is very impressive this year. Look to see how they're going to kind of fare. Their schedule is literally just an Alberta swing schedule, so that fares well for them in terms of the competition. If they get out of the Alberta swing, they would be the top team to compete, obviously, for the WWCFL championship, where on the other side, Winnipeg faced off against Manitoba, and Manitoba didn't lose a beat. Last year, very impressive. The year before, it was up and coming. They reached the final. We talked to Quarterback Sawicki back in one of our podcasts here, so you can go back and just dial it up. 78-0 against the Wolfpack. Wolfpack obviously still young, needs a lot more help in terms of competitive rostering. And then Regina falls to Saskatoon. Not a surprise there, but at the same time, Regina is a retooled, not the same team that it was in the past. Saskatoon continues to be the, you know, basically the big monster that owns the WWCFL. So 34-7 is what we have there. So over the Regina Riot. So week three, a very interesting matchups. In week three, we have Lethbridge and Edmonton under winless, and they're going to be facing off together, and we'll see who will get their first win here, and who's going to be the competitive matchup against Calgary in that Alberta swing. And the other thing we have is Regina versus Winnipeg. Teams coming off big losses. Regina able to only score a score against Saskatoon, allowing 34. And then, obviously, Winnipeg gave up almost 78 points, which doesn't fare well for them. So, and then Saskatoon will face Manitoba. This is the rematch of the 2022 WWCFL Championship. So, you know Manitoba is coming here. They want to get a win in season against the Winnipeg Valkyries. This is a up-and-coming team. Saskatoon's a standard barrier of the WWCFL. So interesting to see how this matchup will come up, if it's going to be a close game or if it's going to be a rout. We don't know how that will transpire, but it's going to be a great matchup there. So we will get information as we get it. There are still photos at the hub, facebook.com/GridironBBs. That is the place to be. That's where you want to be weekly, daily, get the matchup. The best network on the planet covering women's tackle football globally, that is us. That's what we built, and that is the standard of excellence in terms of coverage. So go there. You can get the nice photos, still photos of the Manitoba 78-0 win over the Winnipeg Wolfpack. Also get some nice photos of everything that happened in terms of Mexico, also in Sweden, in Finland, and, of course, the results of the WFA Pro and also WNFC Week 6. And we'll be previewing Week 7, WNFC WFA Pro, in the second hour with the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football, and that is Mark Simone, a.k.a. the backseat coach. We're also going to have Coach Terry Lister in the house of the Denver Bandits, as he's going to give us the skinny and lowdown of what happened with the Denver versus Texas matchup, which is a crucial loss for Denver. See how they're going to fare in terms of the playoff picture. And then we'll dive into WFA Pro. WFA Pro is going to be, I believe, this week. Interesting matchups here. Just quickly here, we have Atlanta. I'm sorry, we have Pittsburgh versus Boston, the key marquee matchup coming up here in week four. And that's going to be, I believe, on FTF and via Revere. I'm pretty sure Revere TV. And then Houston Energy taking on Minnesota Vixen. And we talked to Coach Brian Wiggins, episode 445, about the matchup here between Minnesota and, Houston and Minnesota. And that should be on the Women's Sports Network. So it's going to be interesting matchups there. We're going to dive into the Zazzle Huddle, and we're going to be interviewing the talented longtime veteran of the St. Louis Slam, multi-time champion also as well. And that's going to be – let's bring in Taylor Hay into the conversation here. Hi, Taylor. How's it going?
Going well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks. Appreciate it. What a season. 3-0. Great start. I believe I saw your interview over on St. Louis Stream, and you were talking about, you know, the consistency of the team and where you wanted to be, and you know, obviously the Massey situation that happens every year with every team. But overall, a good start.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, we had it in our minds that we wanted to make sure it was clear that we belonged where we should have been last year. So, you know, in playoffs. And so this year, I know we added, you know, a few teams to the pro. And then also I know, as you know, our side of the conference is a little unbalanced. So we just wanted to make sure we were at the top, whether, you know, they go top four in each or top eight total in pro. We wanted to make sure that we were up there.
Taylor, I think it's been like 12 months since I last talked to you. And before that, I think you were in Kansas City. I think it was the Glory, the last season with the Glory, and then obviously last season as well. So I just said earlier here in the opening, the matchup, everybody's, you know, the trajectory we're on, and you know what you want to do is obviously arrive in Canton, and so the trajectory we're on is a kind of a matchup, a wish matchup for a lot of us in the media people. We were supposed to have St. Louis Slam versus Boston Renegades, but it didn't happen because of COVID. In that COVID state of mind. But this is, I think that's the goal, right? You want to be able to face the monster that everybody knows that is the best team probably on the planet at this point.
Yeah. When we played them last year, you know, as you know, we were neck and neck at half. And then also, as you know, they do have an army and we were about mm-hmm. a roster of 25. So it was hard to compete in the second half just because of that. So we are prepared for it. I mean, we had people messaging us all year, like, oh, you know, towards the end of the year, actually, like, you know, we wanted a Boston-St. Louis championship. So we felt like, okay, well, we have to put in the work to make that happen. So that is our end goal.
Taylor, tell us a little bit about the Slam of 2023. Defensively, you guys are really good. You guys are basically shutting down everybody. Offensively, you guys are having a really good balance. Balanced game also as well, and the Lions doing a really good job. So I know you've had, three games. You had DCD, right? You guys were up against DCD, I think, last week, if I'm correct. But tell us a little bit about the 3 weeks so far.
So far, so good. I mean, obviously, we know the more points that we score and the less points that we get, we allow that, you know, it's going to help us with Massey. We also have two veterans that returned after having babies. So Brooklyn and Kaylee. And then we did take a loss in a preseason scrimmage this year. Had a pretty major injury to our defense. So we are trying to fill that in. But overall, you know, we've probably in 2016. So we're trying to maintain.
Now, Columbus has been really good in terms of being competitive with the pro division. So this week, I mean, I was kind of surprised that they didn't put up any points. But at the same time, like I'm saying, your defense is really, really solid. You guys got put up, I think, 42 points this week, and then last week against DCD as well on the road. So what do you attribute that side of the ball? Just, you know, better? You guys are better in terms of, like, the rushing and the and taking care of, you know, just chasing the ball, in other words, in terms of turnovers and things like that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, our coaches prepare us very well. Like, we give a lot. I mean, I have to give a lot of credit to them, obviously. I know we do the work, but they prepare us. We watch a lot of film. We always know who the best players on defense and offense is, and then we also know where the weaknesses are, so we try to exploit that. I do think last year only beating them 14-6 hurt us. And so, you know, a lot of people say that may be the reason why, one of the reasons why, you know, Massey-wise, it didn't line up for us. So we wanted to make it clear this year that, you know, that we're going to put points up and then also not allow them to score. So I will say, like, improvement-wise, I know they're considered technically a new team. It was the second year, I think, and they definitely have come a long way. They look really good.
Now, Taylor, we talked to Brian Wiggins this last week on our podcast. He was looking forward to Minnesota. You guys got Minnesota the first week, and you guys put up 20-0 on that. Was it a different look Minnesota team for you guys, or how did you guys look at Minnesota week one?
Now, as you know, some off-season changes happen in the football world. Everyone knows. So losing Grace, we knew would change their offense. They also lost a tight end, and then they lost a few other defensive players. So that didn't change the game plan for us. We still wanted to put up, you know, 20 or more points. We actually had a lot of penalties that game that cost us. We we could have scored more, and that's what we plan and want to do when we go up there. But we also know, you know, it's week four for them, week five for them. So they will have made some improvements, and also, you know, it's on their home turf. So they're going to want the W just as bad as we do. So we knew going in, though, it would be a different game. I mean, losing Grace is pretty much, that was, you know, their offense.
Yeah. And that was, I think, big blow in a lot of senses, because that was basically their bread and butter, right? To try to get her in space, mm-hmm. to get
yep.
it running. And so that allowed them to do a lot of offensive trickery, which didn't happen in this sense. So this is a bye week for you. You guys are focusing in, or are you guys taking the week off, or how is the focus going for this week before you go to Minnesota?
We actually got a message yesterday that we're maxing tomorrow. So definitely not taking the week off. So a lot of agility, a lot of recovery. We're still going to put in, you know, implement new things and then, you know, review the things that we already know. So I think Coach Q might give us the weekend off because of Mother's Day, but, you know, you never know. We're trying to win a championship, so he could still go ahead and schedule the practice for Saturday. But either way, it's, you know, we're still got our foot on the gas.
Now, Taylor, you got Jada Humphrey, Kelsey Nesbitt, and you got Kaylee all in the mix here in terms of the receiving core. Pretty impressive. I think all of them are two touchdowns at least on the season. They're averaging over 15 yards on average. What can you say about that three monster right there?
Oh, and then we also have a rookie, Carrie. She was out. She wasn't there the second game, but she's a rookie that we picked up here in St. Louis. She's also, I think she has two touchdowns from this last week. And so, yeah, it's nice to have that. We did lose Danielle Price, and so we needed to replace, you know, her power on offense. So I know, as you know, Kaylee also plays defense. So it is nice to have that. I know Jamie appreciates that. And then it also allows me to be able to run more comfortably because, you know, they have to respect the pass game. So I think it's a nice balance, and it is definitely going to be something that pulls us ahead, you know, moving further in the season.
All right. I know you guys had that photo op, and it was really nicely done before the season over. And I think we shared it on our gallery on Instagram. But, I mean, is this Jamie's year, you think? This is in terms of passing and getting the efficiency going? Because I know I think it's like over six over six touchdowns the last time I checked. Probably over more than now, right, from this past weekend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's see. I think her rookie year was 2016. So, you know, she never threw the ball before that. So she was always a receiver, DB. So I think mm-hmm. that this, you know, veteran-wise, she's more comfortable in the pocket. She also, O-line-wise, you know, we struggled, you know, the last few years just having numbers. So now we have a solid O-line and a few veterans that retired and, you know, decided to come back. So she's real comfortable and you can see it in the way she plays. She's always been a captain, but, you know, I could tell that this year is she's hungry for it too. There's a lot of, you know, money we left on the table last year, so we were ready for it.
Now, defensively, the last game I saw was against DCD, and you had, I think it was Jandell and Devitt and West and Straw, and I mean, these are bullies. I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah.
I thought DCD could handle that, but these girls are bullies in terms of tackles and in terms of for loss. So that's a good sign for you guys going forward, because if you go up against a Boston, you're going to need that type of aggressiveness.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of people, when they watch film, they might, you know, think, wow, they're kind of small and underestimate, you know, the power. But we hit bags every practice. So, you know, we make sure, like, we don't ever take our foot off the gas in terms of tackling and making contact with each other at practice, because obviously muscle memory. But, you know, our defense, like I said, we had a major loss in the scrimmage. We lost Raven Williams. She's an outside linebacker. So, but we also gained Brooklyn Devitt back. So it was one of those exchanges, kind of a bittersweet one. So, and Brooklyn's small, but she's Jasmine too, but they both, you know, have a lot of tackles. So.
What do you say of the special teams this year? Because against DCD, you guys did pretty well. So as a whole, do you think your whole squad has improved for this season in terms of like the three levels, which is, you know, the special teams, the offense, and the defense?
I think special teams by default get better when you have numbers, right? So now we have, mm-hmm. I think, 35 versus 25. So, you know, rookies that, you know, they don't know the game as well, maybe not as comfortable on offense or defense, get their shine on special teams. And we value special teams. Special teams are very important. Coach Q does not let up about special teams, and we practice them and we talk about them, and so that they understand that they're scoring opportunities as well. But also they set the tone early on, obviously kickoff or, you know, kickoff return, that sets the tone pretty much for the rest of the game. So we definitely value those, and it is nice to have a breather now and then. So, you know, I think having the numbers on your roster is very important.
What changed from last season to this season in terms of recruiting for you guys? Did you guys up in the off season do recruiting, or how was that approached?
I would say yes. You know, we play in the off season, we play in a flag league here in St. Louis. And, you know, a lot of times, I mean, most of the teams we play against realize or understand and know that we play tackle, but it's sometimes hard to get them to take the next step to go into tackle. So we did pick up some recruits from flag. So that was nice. And then, like I said, we got a few back from injuries from having babies. And then we also recruited some retirees from the SLAM, so from the 2016-2017 championship team. So kind of everywhere.
Is this still a struggle in the market area? Because I know you got Kansas City and the WNFC over there to fill the rosters as well. So is that something you guys are still – I know in the past where you guys have taken a season off, it's because of the fact that you didn't have the numbers, but – is it something that's improved at this point, or you feel like the explosion of flag is going to benefit you guys to, you know, as a feeder system, in other words?
I think it's about the same. The issue ends up being, you know, we can't – a lot of these teams, can, especially the WMC, can afford to house people. They can afford to fly people in. That's not really how we operate. We don't have out-of-town players. Everyone lives locally. And I don't think dynamically we can afford to have out-of-town people unless they're, you know, consistent and can get here on the regular, you know. So we don't mm-hmm. really dive into that pot. But I do know that we've been making more efforts in the off season to recruit. So going to, you know, college campuses when, you know, the seniors that are, you know, graduating, or we have a rugby team here that sometimes some of them are interested in playing. So, I mean, we just kind of keep our ears to the street and kind of see if there's any local things that we can be a part of that can spread the word about us.
Taylor, what is the relationship with the Battle Hawks going forward? Can you tell us about a little bit of that excitement and having a team, a pro team back in St. Louis in terms of a major league?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I mean, you could probably saw it on social media that they set attendance records, and people in St. Louis, they do love sports. I will give them that. So we are one of our former teammates. She has retired now. She is the director of marketing for the Battle Hawks. So she was able to create a partnership for us. And she actually had initiated that in 2020, but as you know, COVID kind of took that away from us as well. But she was able to and then as I think you saw the picture of us meeting with Mrs. mm-hmm. Garcia, she was so kind. She like was so happy to meet with us, and she said she's been you know, thinking about getting into women's football investment wise and she just wasn't sure which, you know, route she wanted to take, but she felt like it was a sign that she met Chris, you know, my teammate. So we think that moving forward, we might see a little more involvement from her in women's football. And honestly, it might not just be the WFA. It might be, you know, WNFC as well. Like all of women's football, she's very interested in. So I think that benefits everyone. And I know, right, you know, sometimes we compare the leagues and, you know, people can go back and forth about their preference. But overall, I think she's interested in supporting women's football in general.
What did you think of the XFL excitement in the city? Do you think that if it stays, you think that might benefit you guys if you guys are, you know, in the stands or part of the game? Because I know I talked to Lois Cook, and she's really involved in terms of the Defenders, you know, in terms of the day-to-day operation, getting her name out there and getting the Divas to get, you know, to the average Defender fan to notice that obviously they exist in the market and the community as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, they plan on staying here. I don't think they plan on leaving. We went to a few games, but we also participated in tailgating, and we had a tent in the tailgating, and we had so many people that just didn't realize we existed, which, as you know, it's just such a common thing. No matter how much advertising we do, they're just, you know, so surprised. And then we gained a few fans. We met people after our first home game that we met you guys at the Battle Hawks, and we wanted to support you. They're so happy that there's women's football. And I think moving forward for the city, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I don't know if you know, but we also have an MLS team. So that is also in a new stadium. So that has brought a lot of love and camaraderie in St. Louis. And I think having the, again, has also been able to help put St. Louis on the map again.
Do you feel like that relationship with the Battle Hawks next year, as an example, during their season, are you guys able to plan that out to where you guys are going to be, you know, in the stands basically for the games, where on a weekly basis basically?
Yeah, we were in a suite. My teammate Christina, who is the director of marketing, she set us up in a suite. We were able to, mingle with some of the players and some of the fans, and we got to watch football. And, you know, they were off to a good start. I know it's unfortunate they didn't make the playoffs, but they had a good season. So we look forward to continuing that partnership next year. I know she's working on some off-season things, maybe to get us both in at the same places and community events and things like that. So I think it's a great partnership for us. And as you know, like supporting them, I don't know if we'll be able to see any of them in our June games, because as you know, they don't actually live here. A lot of them, they're all stationed in Texas, and they're not in season anymore. So I'm not sure how much commitment they have in their off-season. But I know she's going to try to get a few of them to our games in June.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good start, right, for you guys having a pro team in there, kind of give you more visibility. I know it's the XFL, but, I mean, Danny Garcia is pretty pretty good visionary, so we'll see if she buys into that. I think the profitability is all the investors pull back on the profitability because the attendance numbers aren't there. So it's just a matter of, you know, doing like, you know, what like Carrie does out in Vegas, which is, you know, go support the WNBA team, right? The next local women's sports team, or the NWSL team, right? Show up at the tailgates and just in that general sense, you know, women's sports in general, just show up at a women's sports and, you know, in general event. I think that's going to help, you know, visibility in terms of all the sports overlapping and getting the community and the fans inside understanding that you exist. There are games at particular seasons, months of the season in terms of the summer where you can actually, you know, catch some football and stuff like that. So, all right. So you get the bye week this week. Then we get, I think it's Minnesota. Minnesota on the 20th. And then I believe you get another bye week, right? Right after the Minnesota trip, you guys get another bye week. And then you guys go, I guess, post Dallas, right?
I think it's Derby City first. No, you're right. You're right. Dallas and the Derby City. Yep. Both at home.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys finish up at home against Dallas and Derby. And that should put you in. But we know how Massey is. So I guess cross your fingers and hopefully that'll get you in the door. If you're the New York Knockout, you're probably cursing Massey right now because they're trying to put up points too. From last year, getting shafted.
I was looking at the message today because I hadn't really seen anything posted about it. And I said, you know what, let me look at it. And I did, and obviously was pleased with our results. But I was looking, you know, at some of these teams, like, you know, that, like, I'm not really sure how, it, you know, because I don't even want to rack my brain how it works. But, you know, like new teams like Alabama, who are, you know, obviously historically a good team in both WNFC and WFA, I don't really think it'll work out in their favor due to the Massey because they didn't have, you know, they didn't play last year. You know, so it's like one of those things where it just doesn't necessarily seem fair, but I you know, that would be a whole other conversation, you know.
Well, the legwork has to be done by the league, and the league doesn't want to do the legwork. So it allows let Massey do the legwork.
I'm aware.
In terms of the strength of schedule and everything else.
I just felt like last week, I think that they don't know, and that's why I mentioned at the beginning, they don't know if they haven't decided if they're going to do top 8 in the pro or if they're going to do top 4 in each conference. So, I mean, that's also up in the air, but, you know, Coach Q's message to us is it doesn't matter either way. Let's just be at the top so that it's not a question, you know. But I'm sure that makes it difficult for other teams to kind of plan. I mean, because as you know, we don't have a lot of funds, most teams. So playoff-wise, that you, it's nice to kind of get a little bit of a prediction halfway through the season, you know. So, and especially for us, like we would travel, you know, decently far probably for any of them. So if we have to travel, obviously the plan is always to host at home.
Exactly. I don't know if that's ever going to change, right? Because it's going to be a situation where somebody has to come in and fund it or do some better funding in terms of hopefully the new WFACO can figure out a situation or a system to where if you do make the playoffs, there's some sort of money that comes to you, you know, because I think that would be the ideal thing, right, where at least to cover some of the travel costs in terms of all the teams. I've always said that before. Like if every team fundraised at a certain point and every team just donated, you know, X amount of dollars to a just general pool, then it would be no problem because every team's just donating to a general pool. And then at the end, the top eight teams would be able to dive into that pool, given the league would obviously have that decision to make. And then you're able to get at least some sort of benefit out of it. That was the gripe that I think Odessa had for a very long time. You know, you run the table, you get to the playoffs, and then now you got to pony up $50,000 just to get to the two rounds. And that never happened, so you lost money. Even though you went to the finals or you're a runner-up or you even won, you still ended up in red at the end of the year in terms of, operating costs and everything else. So that's got to change, and we know that.
Yeah, we definitely know that here. And I think for me, I've been playing – was year 14, and so for the first, like, obviously 5-6 years, I didn't really, you know, say much, even though I was collecting information, whether it's on Facebook or, you know, through these podcast interviews, things like that. And then I slowly realized, like, something wasn't adding up, and it's also a lack of transparency, which is, I mean, we have a players group that is designed for players, you know, in the WFA. And a lot of times that's pretty much the common consensus. Like, I mean, I know our coach doesn't like allow us to be on the business model side when it comes to the league, because he's there to coach us and we deal with, you know, that's what we do. But being the veteran player I am and transitioning to my role, probably more admin in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, that, you know, I've been more involved, and it's been still, I'm still flabbergasted at, you know, winning championships and not receiving any rewards from it. So, you know, I remember that one year they said, oh, $10,000 in equipment from Zenith. And then the next year when we're at our preseason, we have 2 free helmets that were gifted to us. And then it was,
that's the frustrating part, because I've not been able to get, I haven't been able to get a straight answer. I've been doing this, what, 2009? And nobody from the WFA, CEO, owner, okay, besides Wynn, have come on to the podcast. But nobody in the WFA has, in terms of a business mind or the person in charge of business, nobody's able to come on to the show here. Because I don't know if they're avoiding the hard questions that I would ask, which is the same question you would ask. How does the funding work? How is it fair that you get, you know, a Boston that goes through runs the table, wins the championships, and at the end of the year, they're still in a negative state of funds? How is that possible?
Yeah, and
that's just not, it's not even fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that, you know, I ask more because, you know, you're seeing things happening in other leagues and you're seeing the progression and the creativity happening in other places, and could just be the branding and marketing. But at the same time, like, you know, when the WNFC started, and, you know, I had a conversation with OJ, like, she had a business plan. Everything was very transparent. So I just think when things are transparent, even if they might not work out, or even if the business model fails, it's still transparency. So I think that's super important. I mean, that's important in life. It's not just women's football. So I think a lot of the problems would be solved if there was just a little bit of transparency, and things would make sense to us. I know that the new, I don't know what her title is, I think CEO or Jess Dodge, I know my coach has had nothing but good things to say about her, and she seems to be, you know, she's got her feet on the pavement. So I'm hoping some change. I know it can't happen overnight, but I'm hoping to see some changes within the next couple of years if she sticks around.
I think the best way that was shifted, you know, everybody's like, oh, Oscar, you guys are WNFC homers. Well, we're not WNFC homers. We're just literally just understanding how the sport has to go to a business level, right? Because it's just not fair to pay to play and not go to the next level. You got the XFL that goes to the next level, and they got investors. You got the USFL, right? They have investors.
Yep.
Every other men's league gets investors. And somehow women's tackle football doesn't get investors. So there's either a problem with the business model, right, that no investor wants to dive into or put in their money. So I think at the end of the day, that's really what it boils down to, right? Can I get a return on my money? And if the answer is no, then you're taking your money off the table and you're moving on. Right? Exactly. So
hopefully,
you know, the WFA going pro, right, in terms of what they call a pro model, hopefully the pro model is going to be similar to what the WNFC is trying to achieve, right? Like you said, a transparency in terms of a business model, understanding the fundraising, how to allocate the fundraising, how to get the sponsorships to go to all teams, not just one, you know, one league-wide sponsor. One league-wide sponsor doesn't do anything for you. It helps each team in terms of, you know, discounts and stuff like that. But it's, you know, if you get a Riddell to actually give you 45 helmets, okay, that's a big deal, right? Like,
it's
you get 45
deal,
helmets.
Right?
So it's like less cost for the player, right? Less cost for the owner,
right,
all that stuff. So, yeah, there's just a lot of changes that have to be made in terms of, you know, from one league to the next. You know, whether we get there or not, like, as to your point, you know, it's a five-year plan, right? Hopefully
right.
the new CO in the WFA also has that five-year plan, right, to achieve where we don't have to pay to play in terms of the model that exists today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's our goal, and I'm hoping she gets us there, because at this point, you know, something has to change, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. So we'll be patiently waiting.
All right. So Taylor, happy Mother's Day. And I know your little mini me keeps you going every week. And I get to see your posts all the time, and she's very, very open-minded and also very creative. And she's a handful, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, she reminds me, she's a spitting image of myself. So my mother says that's payback. So she keeps me busy. She keeps me busy.
Well, I know she's excited for the season, and she's over there practicing with you guys. So looking forward to Minnesota at this point. I think this is going to be a big challenge for both teams. But, you know, if you guys get to the stage, three more wins, basically, that's what we're looking at right now, right? You go to Minnesota, then you get the week off, and then you get Dallas and then Derby one more time. And then it would be the Masseys to decide, like you said, your seeding. So kind of exciting time for you guys. Did the attendance grow at your games this year? Have you seen a growth in attendance at this point in this season?
I would say we had a nice turnout for our first home game, considering it was really cold. We obviously went on the road for 2 weeks and then a bye weekend, and then you know, we're another bye weekend. So hopefully, we are going to be promoting our home games in June back to back. So I'm hoping we can, you know, get some numbers out there and have some fun with that.
All right. I'm always entertaining to talk to you. Always exciting to kind of just dive into everything in terms of even not just your team, but the whole league in itself. I always appreciate your time and making the time for us. So you're always welcome back as always. So anything else for the fans? We got June 3rd and June 10th. So if anybody's listening, Taylor, where do they have to go to get tickets so they can show up against Dallas and against DCD?
So they can go on our website and buy them virtually, and then it will give them a QR code. So that's www.stlslamfootball.com. And then also, you know, they can follow on social media with any updates with information, but they can also buy tickets at the gate as well.
All right. Are you guys more prominent on IG? What is your favorite platform, or where's your most engaging platform?
I would say Instagram is the most engaging. We do share a lot of the same things on Facebook. As you know, there's different audiences, different demographics. So we share on both, but Instagram is where we get our most foot traffic.
All right, so guys, go to IG, follow St. Louis Slam, St. Louis Slam Football. Get ready for the two home games, June 3rd, June 10th. It's going to be Dallas Elite Mustangs and the Derby City Dynamite. And that would put the St. Louis Slam on the trajectory for the road to Canton to arrive in Canton, Ohio. So looking forward to see when you guys arrive in Canton. It looks like that's where we're at, and that's where we're headed.
Yep, looking forward to it.
All right, Taylor, have a great night. Appreciate it. We'll chat probably after the season or before the championships round. Thank you again.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, guys. Taylor Hay, running back St. Louis Slam, longtime veteran, 14-year veteran of the sport in the Women's Football Alliance, also played in the WNFC, I believe, one season with the KC Glory. So really, really awesome. And, you know, you got her take on there. The sport obviously needs changes, both leagues in terms of the United States, trying to make the changes to where the players don't have to pay to play, trying to acquire major sponsors, trying to get some sort of, you know, deals where the teams are allocated certain sponsorships in terms of equipment and other things and upgrades. Television is one of the things that both leagues have been able to do. One league on a streaming format, the other league with an arrangement with the Women's Sports Network and for the fans, including ESPN3. So, you know, strides are being made on both sides as to who will arrive in terms of the first league that, you know, the players do not have to pay to play. And I think that's going to be a big deal when we get there, whether it be in the WFA for, you know, pro division, or it's going to be in the WNFC in terms of the goal that the WNFC has set for themselves. But still a lot of work to do. And so if you listen to our podcast, obviously you've heard a lot of opinions over the 400 episodes that we've done on the podcast in terms of what the sport needs, what needs to be elevated, transparency, as she just mentioned here, about how things need to be transparent, how the players need to be involved with that transparency so that they also can find resources or network with other people so that it will benefit the league ultimately, where the players will get paid a salary in terms of for playing football, in terms of a daily or even, you know, a part-time job as an example, because it's only 6 weeks to 8 weeks. So within the 6 weeks to 8 weeks, it kind of becomes like no different than the Arena Football League, where every player gets, you know, a $300 salary plus bonuses and things like that. So that would be a luxury in women's football if all the players even got, you know, a $200, $300 bonus or even a $500 paycheck, as they say, for each game. That would be an amazing season for them, and also it would catapult the sport into a more visibility. Working with the XFL, a lot of both leagues, you know, in terms of major markets, need to elevate their game and really try to partner and tailgate and show up at stands and that kind of deal so that they can also get the visibility on, you know, in a arena, a setting on a pro men's level where there's at least, you know, 40,000 people showing up to the games. You're able to get, you know, out of 40,000, if you're able to reach another 300 to 1,000 people to come to your game, that is a win. So you're able to do that consistently and support the local teams, whether it be women's sports teams in terms of soccer. Soccer is huge, especially with the National Women's Soccer League. Depending on the markets, there's teams there. If you're in a certain market, obviously you got the WNBA. You also have the National Women's Hockey League or the Pro Women's Federation League, which is the hockey league for women as well. So a lot of things to be done still to ensure that the sport is not a pay-to-play sport and it is more of a salary-based like the NFL and like all the other men's pro leagues that do get paid a salary to play. So interesting to see how that's going to transpire. But St. Louis on a trajectory right now. They're taking on Minnesota Vixen. That's May 20th, and I believe it's going to be televised on either for the fans or the Women's Sports Network. It's one of the key marquee games. Then it's going to be June 3rd, like she said, and June 10th. It will be Dallas Elite visiting and then Derby City Dynamite also visiting. So that's the final two games. So go to stlouisfootball.com. Go to St. Louis Football on IG as well, and you get tickets right there, as you said, and reserve them virtually as well. So if you have any other questions, go right there at St. Louis Football, stlouislandfootball.com. All right. Let's finish up the international scene. And we did have a matchups here. Let's see here. NWFL in the UK over in Europe, week two. And that was, week one, Peterborough Royals, 14, Leeds Chargers, 20, Birmingham, 26, London Warriors, 60. That was kind of a shocker to see the Birmingham Lions fall. This is a 999, first time they're doing this. Then we also have the other league, the NWFL 7-on-7 is going to kick off also as well. But you got four teams there. Week two is going to be coming up here this weekend, 5-13, Mother's Day weekend. Edinburgh taking on Peterborough Royals. Peterborough looks to rebound here. Edinburgh right off the start, first week one. They get the bye in week one. Then the London Warriors will be taking on Leeds Chargers. That's going to be a classic matchup, 1-0 against 1-0. Leeds put up 20 points. Warriors put up 60 and only held 26. So this is going to be a big challenge for the Leeds Chargers. They got to be able to match firepower by firepower, especially when they take on London. And the Warriors look to be the team to beat in the National Women's Football Conference in terms of the BAFA women in the UK. So we'll keep tabs on that as well. LaFay, the Maya's Femenil, down south, also continues to rock. They took care of the Toluca Lobos this past weekend. You get the photos right there from Maya's Football Feminine in LaFay. We'll also keep updated on the Lexfa picture in terms of what's happening in Mexico with Lexfa. We're going to be obviously diving into the WFL. And Ana Garza was part of the WFL weekend with the V-Queens of Saltillo. She got the lowdown right there at the hub as well. So we'll keep tabs on the Women's Football League in terms of Mexico, in terms of the Legends Football League style of play. So it's, I believe, 8-on-8. Then usually Legends Football League plays 7-on-7. And then coming up week here, we said week three in Calgary, or I'm sorry, week three in the WWCFL. It's going to be Lethbridge versus Edmonton. One team's going to be looking for a win. Regina will take on Winnipeg, both winless teams here. So four teams winless. Two of those will win this weekend to try to stay competitive. And then we got the clash of the rematch of the 2022 championship. That is the Saskatoon Valkyries taking on the Manitoba Fearless. That one's the one we're going to be keeping an eye on as well. You also had the State of Origin over in Australia, and Gridiron Queensland took the victory first. So the next games, I believe, are coming up this weekend. New South Wales will be visiting Queensland. We'll keep you up to date there as well. We do have the live stream at the hub, facebook.com/gridironbeauties. That is the place to be. So if you want to head over there right now, you can get the live stream of that. We also have the Week 5 Top 10 Plays, courtesy of the WNFC, courtesy of WScore as well. And so pretty awesome. And then we have the preview as well of the Finland kickoff, Turku Trojans, Helsinki Wolverines, Tampere Saints, and Northern Lights, and all the information that I had mentioned at the top of the hour, which is the four squads that will compete for the Maple League Championship this season. So you can get right there and go to the hub and get the breakdown there also from, I believe, the American Football in Finland. That is the breakdown from that. And you have week two preview and also live stream, a recap of week one and preview of week two. And that was courtesy of the Gothenburg Marvels. The week one was against Norrköping Panthers. And then the week two matchup on YouTube. So you can watch the game there as well in terms of Finland. There was international news where Germany is getting ready for their matchup in terms of the IFAB European Championships. Great Britain won the first game. Now they're going to be facing Finland. Germany against Finland. I believe it's the matchup here. Let me double check here. So German preparing for the two international games. One of those is going to be against, let me see here, Great Britain. So it's going to be Great Britain with the 28th German women's national team, and Sullivan expecting to go up against Great Britain. So Great Britain looks to go 2-0 on the season in terms of the European championships. Let's bring in the Oracle of Women's Tackle Football. Let's bring in the backseat coach, Mark Simone, in the house. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Hi, Oscar. How are you? I'm fresh back from Detroit this past weekend to watch the Renegades take on the Venom. So I've had a lot of catching up to do since I got back, but it is good to be back.
Well, we no surprise, Mark, right? Boston does what they do, and Detroit continues to struggle. So that's the story so far this year, this season.
Yep. That was the story. I arrived in Detroit to find that Detroit Venom have, kind of a smallish roster. I think, the total roster is probably about, around 30, maybe a little bit more on the field. There weren't quite as many as the full roster. So that's the situation they're working with. But I do have to say that, like, under the circumstances, I thought Detroit played pretty well. They had some pretty nice plays, especially on offense. And surprisingly, they had a lot of throwing sets in their game plan, and they really sort of focused on that. And, they had a few runs worked in there, but we didn't see a lot of running from them. So that was a little bit of a surprise. They were actually able to move the ball down the field, but they were prevented from scoring. Of course, with Boston, there was a lot of scoring. A lot of the younger players, rookies and second-year players made a lot of contributions. And I did a write-up on the Renegades website. If you want to check it out, you can find it there in their press box section, a little write-up of the game and some of the players that really excelled in that game.
We're going to end up sending you the link so we can share it out there as well, so we can get the recap on there. So that'll be nice to have. But Boston continues to run. And so Mother's Day weekend here, we get the matchup that we wanted. Mark, Renegades, Passion. This is going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, these are the kind of the two big kids on the block, so to speak. And this very well could be a preview of the National Conference Championship in the WFA Pro. So this will be a very intriguing game. Both teams are 2-0. Pittsburgh's coming off a victory over Tampa Bay this past weekend, which was televised on the women's. I didn't get a chance to watch the game end-to-end, but I saw a highlight reel and, I have a good idea about what that game was like. And it seemed like it was a very, very intriguing game.
Yeah, Pittsburgh put up I think on their page, there's a highlight reel of the game versus Tampa Bay Inferno. And we knew the Pittsburgh's on a trajectory, Mark, that we talked about at the beginning of the season, right? This is a Franco's tribute season. So that they want to just get the W's and get to Canton, right? And showcase their owner and maybe finish it up. They're going to get the opportunity to face Boston this week, and then they will get the opportunity to tune up for the playoffs one more time against Boston in terms of their schedule. So it's Boston Pittsburgh in the final week of the season, June 10th. So this is going to be a crucial matchup and see how they fare against Boston and how Boston will fare against one of the top level teams, as you mentioned here.
Oh, definitely. I think considering that, the Passion have already beaten DC and now they've beaten Tampa Bay, facing Boston twice is really gives them, you know, an opportunity to improve, get to see their main competition twice before having, you know, having to face them in the playoffs. So I think that's really good for Pittsburgh to get, you know, two good looks at Boston. And that'll increase their chances of beating Boston in the playoffs. So this weekend they'll be playing here in Boston, and it'll be shown on FTF Next. And you can find the information on how to find that game on the Renegades website and on the WFAProFootball.com website as well. This will be a good matchup. As I said, you know, these are the two presumptive favorites in the conference, and it'll be an interesting matchup because Pittsburgh is a little bit of a different team than they were last year, and I think they've shown it in their first two games so far.
What do you say if Tampa Bay first look? Tampa Bay Inferno was able to muster only 6 points. That Pittsburgh defense really held them back. They were able to contain Pittsburgh's offense to, you know, 21 points. So if you're Tampa, you're scoping DC already. DC really in a must win against Tampa Bay. So it's a crucial matchup here coming up here this weekend in terms of the Inferno and the Divas.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, at the beginning of this in our preview of the WFA this season, Coach Lister and I were talking about, you know, DC's brutal schedule. And one of the games that we talked about and debated was this game with Tampa Bay. And, you know, he's trying to figure out if this is going to a game that DC will win or not. And, you know, now that, you know, Tampa and DC have played like competition in, you know, Pittsburgh Passion, you know, we kind of get a sense that, you know, maybe Tampa Bay is the better team because the margin of victory was much closer in the Tampa-Pittsburgh game than it was when DC played Pittsburgh. So yes, as I said last week, I expect this to be a very hard game for DC to win. But it is, you know, for DC, this is one of your most winnable games of the season here, right? And if they don't get this one, you know, it might not be until the end of the regular season where they get one that they can win when they face the Detroit Venom.
Yeah, I agree with that. Terry is Terry, do you agree that this is more of a must-win for DC than Tampa Bay?
Yes. I think what Mark just said is spot on. I mean, they have a brutal schedule this season, which is why we predicted that they would only have a win or two. And like Mark said, the Detroit game is obviously very winnable because Detroit's one of the lesser competitive teams in WFA Pro. But outside of that, this is the next closest winnable game, which isn't saying much because Tampa Bay is very good. Which when you see that score 21-6, I mean, that's a pretty competitive game versus a very good opponent in Pittsburgh. So that kind of lets us know where the hierarchy is in the East.
Terry, I brought you on, we have Pittsburgh-Boston this coming up weekend. This is a big gauge metric for Pittsburgh, I think, more so than Boston. But if Pittsburgh can keep it close here, one touchdown, one or two touchdowns in terms of a you know, loss, that's going to tell us a lot about the growth of this Passion team.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a really highly anticipated game because, in my estimation, Pittsburgh is one of the only threats to Boston this year. In my opinion, they're the second best team in the WFA. So how close they are to Boston remains to be seen, but I'm really excited to see it because I think if anybody's going to test Boston, it's going to be Pittsburgh. And so it's kind of cool because when you play them in the regular season, that's kind of like a preview for the playoffs. Because I do think they're going to see each other in the playoffs also. And so the first crack you get at them is kind of like a I'm not going to say it doesn't count. Like, it obviously counts. But winning in the playoffs is more important. So I'll be interested to see how Pittsburgh stacks up to them in the first meeting.
All right, Mark, the other game that happened was for the fans. It was the, let's see here, the Houston. Well, we got Houston, Minnesota coming up this weekend. But the other game was Houston against Dallas. We already knew the energy, talking to Brian Wiggins last episode 445, that he knew that was going to be somewhat of a challenge, but ultimately it was not a challenge. And then coming up this weekend against Minnesota, it's really a situation where Houston knows where they want to go. Minnesota comes off that big win last week, but it's not against pro-to-pro competition. So this is another matchup for Minnesota because they lost against St. Louis.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think what we can take away from this past Saturday's game between Houston and the Dallas Elite is that, you know, the Houston Energy are kind of peerless in the WFA in the state of Texas. They're clearly the lead dog. It doesn't seem, you know, they obviously handled the Dallas Elite Mustangs, and it looks like the Arlington Impact is not really up to snuff with their recent performances, and the Houston Energy is the team from Texas, if you will, in the WFA Pro Set. And I'm very intrigued by this upcoming matchup between Houston and Minnesota. I don't believe that they've played in recent history, if at all. Historically, I can't recall if these two teams have ever met in the regular season or playoffs. So this will be a very interesting matchup. Obviously, Minnesota wants to improve on, you know, continue improving, and they don't want to let this one go to Houston. But I think Houston is going to play a very competitive game there.
Terry, you think the numbers are going to affect Houston going to Minnesota, and that could be a factor in terms of the roster?
I don't, and I actually got the inside scoop. Sorry, I should have told you that, Messenger. I got
breaking
the inside
news
scoop on
right
that.
Here on the podcast.
Yeah, breaking
Terry
news.
Luther.
Watch out. Yeah, so I got the inside scoop with the Houston-Dallas game. I was able to talk to somebody that was there in person. They said, obviously, 34-0 tells you a lot about how the game went. But he gave me a breakdown. He kind of said, like, I think the opening kickoff, Dallas fumbled that, and Houston recovered it. The quarterback, her last name is pronounced Jacobs. She had one passing touchdown with two rushing touchdowns. Her one passing touchdown was to Brooke Wilson, formerly of the Houston Mambas. They had a running back named Alexis Anderson who had a running back score. And then the standout players on defense were cornerback Chanel Cotton with an interception, and defensive end Danielle Smock had the biggest hit of the game. And so the Houston defense had an interception and about four or five sacks, obviously a very decisive victory, 34-0. And so I know Houston was a little bit disappointed. They were expecting it to be more competitive than that. And unfortunately, Dallas did not bring that to the field. So, and he also mentioned that the Dallas Elite head coach may have recently resigned. And so that's a little bit of rumor mill. I can't say that for sure, but that's what he was told. And so there might be some internal stuff going on with Dallas, which obviously it doesn't help anything. But all in all, obviously just a very decisive victory for Houston.
Now, Terry, going into Minnesota, Minnesota takes care of Nebraska, but Nebraska is not Houston Energy. So that's one of the, you know, it's got a big challenge. In other words, pro to pro. And this is the game they're going to be watching. We're going to be watching that game, I believe, on the Women's Sports Network. So this is one of the ones that we got to sit up with the popcorn and get ready to go and see how the Vixen fare against the Houston Energy at this point. So if you guys want the take, episode 445, Brian Wiggins, head coach of the Houston Energy. And he also dived in last week in terms of the monster that is the Boston Renegades as well. So if you guys want tidbits on that, you get episode 445 right there. Terry, Let's move on here. Cali War easily takes care of Arlington. It just doesn't seem like Mark says that Arlington is on the same level they were last year, so I don't know if that's the roster or what happened there, but they just don't seem to be the same team that they were 2 years ago.
Definitely not. And I also talked to the inside source that I got for Houston Energy. Also, we talked a little bit about that, you know, because they play Arlington often, right? So if anybody would know about Arlington and how they were before and how they are now, it would be Houston. And so what he told me about Arlington is some of the stuff, like, we already know, right? Like, they lost Ken Gabriel to the Kansas City Glory. They lost Tara Thomas to the Texas Elite Spartans. Those are two very good athletes and very good running backs. So Arlington doesn't have those players. Well, what he told me was in past years, Arlington, one of the things you could bank on was they were going to play you tough. So maybe they weren't the best coach team, or maybe they didn't have like a crazy amount of athletes, but they're going to play you tough. So their offensive line was very aggressive. Pair that with a good running back like Ken Gabriel, and it can be a hassle to deal with. I think Tara Thomas either played running back or receiver, but she also played safety, and she's also an amazing safety. So she would pick off anything you threw down the seams. So it made for a tough matchup, and they played a lot of competitive games with that former Arlington team. Now, you fast forward that to the current Arlington team, and they have those two good players that went to the WNFC to different teams, but also when he said that they played them and watched them on film, they're just not the same team. So, like, all that tough football that they were playing before no longer is showing up on tape and showing up in person. And so they're just literally a different version of their former selves, which is unfortunate. And so, like Mark said, you know, with Dallas not putting up a good product against Houston, you start to wonder, you know, how many of these WFA pro teams are going to stay pro, because, you know, there should be a certain line in the sand as far as, you know, what WFA pro means. And unfortunately, Arlington is kind of on the downslide. So hopefully they can return to what they formerly were, but right now they're just not up to par. And so when they play teams like Cali, that's what the results are going to be.
And I know for a fact we've had the discussion here before in several podcasts before, over the 400 podcasts that we've done. We've had the discussion, right, where what team, you know, what a team, you know, gauge is to stay in pro. And we don't have that answer yet. So maybe the WFA CEO will take into that consideration in terms of, do you scale down from 14 to 10, two teams, right, five in each conference, and makes it more competitive, things like that. In terms of Cali War, Mark, they got two more weeks. They get a bye week this week and two more weeks, and then they get another bye week after that. So they get Nevada one more time, and they get Minnesota. So, you know, that freebie in week one, I guess you want to just say scratch it off, because Nevada didn't fare very well, and Arlington didn't fare very well. So I guess credit, you know, the Cali War.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for the Nevada Storm, you know, I'm pretty sure they're itching to get another chance to face the War. I know they feel like they didn't, you know, put up their best effort in their first game with the War. So I'm sure they're looking forward to it. I'm sure the War, the Cali War is looking forward to it, given that, you know, they are, you know, probably, you know, that's a significant matchup for them in the conference. So I'm looking forward to that too, as well. So, and then finally, you know, Cali War ratchets it up at the end of the season with the Minnesota Vixen. So that should be a good matchup. Suffice it to say that the War have these two very crucial contests at home, so that's an advantage for them. I'm pretty sure at least one of these is going to be on the Women's Sports Network. Yes, Cali War versus Minnesota Vixen, and that's kind of all the way in June 10th. That's a long way away now, but I've already circled it on my calendar.
And then it's, you know, you got Wiggins, but then you pick up Tanya Guzman down south from LaFay. So what a benefit there between the two of them. I think this team is truly built to maybe clash with Boston, to your point before, where you had the Warriors clash with Boston, Cali War clash with Boston, but they do have two quarterbacks now they can switch to, which is a bonus for them. Well, obviously a legend, and then the young stud Guzman from down south in Mexico. So this year for that purpose. So I mean, and then you add Gardner, you had mentioned last week, right? Caldwell,
yeah, right.
Guzman's very mobile as well. So, and then you got Barrett and Robinson, Marcucci. So this could be, the Cali Wars opportunity here to return to the spotlight in Canton.
Absolutely. They've got a lot of playmakers now. And all those names you mentioned, those doesn't even count the defensive players like Key Wilson, who actually is a very good receiver. So if they ever need her, she can always play on the other side of the ball. They still have Stomfrey Roberson, Suzanne Lynn, Andre Smith, lots of really, great tacklers on this team. And as you say, and I think as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, yeah, this is definitely a team that is built to go to the championship. And they are, with their roster, they have plans to use these people and reach the championships. I definitely think the, American Conference is going to be a dogfight and a very intriguing battle down the line as we head into the playoffs.
Terry, you feel Cali War, if they do reach that level, if they get out of the, the left coast, as they say, can they compete with Boston? Given the roster and all these talented players that we just mentioned, you think they'll be able to do that?
That is the golden question, isn't it? I think, in my opinion, there's four teams that could finish the regular season undefeated. That's Cali War, Houston Energy, Mile High Blaze, and the St. Louis Slam, which is interesting that they all could go 6-0 and make the – well, yeah, that's right, because they're playing – Minnesota. So they could all go 6-0 and be in the playoffs. Now, in my opinion, Cali and St. Louis are the two that could actually make it to play the East winner. I think those two teams have what it takes to go all the way to the championship. Then obviously the golden question is, how do they stack up against the winner of the East, which is most likely Boston? So in a perfect world, either team would give Boston hell, and it would be a great game, and it would be close, and Boston would be tested, and actually it would be a competitive game for the first time in years. Now, will that be the case? Just let you know. we want it to be the case because we're fans of the sport. We want it to be parity, but easier said than done. Boston is a different animal, and we've been saying it for years, and we're looking forward to Boston or Texas in the WNFC to eventually be tested and lose a game, but that hasn't happened yet. So somebody has to step up and actually do it. And so fingers crossed. But I think St. Louis, if anybody does it this year, it'll be Cali or St. Louis, in my opinion.
I tend to agree with that because the only hindrance, as we talk to Taylor Hay right now, is if somehow injuries affect the Slam, then they would be basically undermanned. Right, against Boston. And Boston is like two teams in one, which you're not going to win. I don't care how much effort you put in and how great you think you are, right? Because that would be a story of stories to tell, right? If Slam would go into to play Boston and they somehow get the upset with a low roster, that would be Iron Man woman against, the Goliath, right? David and Goliath mentality. But I don't know if that's going to be ever the case. I know Brian Wiggins, Terry, His goal is Boston. That's what he said. That's the measuring stick. That's where he wants to arrive, right? At the big stage to go up against Coach Johnson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what his goal should be, right? Like, he has a realistic chance of going 6-0 in the regular season, but obviously be in the playoffs if he can beat Minnesota. And then, he has as good a shot as anybody else to make it to the finals, but Houston's very good. I've been impressed with their score so far. and their brand of football. I mean, picking up Brooke Wilson is a huge pickup. She is crazy fast and another really big weapon for them. But I hesitate to say that how they would stack up, and no offense, you know, like I have a couple friends on that team, how they would stack up against teams like St. Louis and Cali, just based on the numbers and the, you know, talent and, you know, just it's one of those things. Like there's different levels to women's football. And in my opinion, on the West, it's Cali and St. Louis with Mile High and Houston behind them. And so we'll see. I'm more right than I'm wrong, but I'm okay with being wrong once in a while. And so we'll see how that plays out.
Mark, if you're Jeff King, you're building this machine to take on team on the planet, you know, in terms of the WFA. If you get there and can't make it happen, that's a big disappointment, right? It's got to be a big disappointment because you built this for that. It's literally this team is built for that.
Yes, the Cali War has been there before, right? And before them, the year before, the Los Angeles Warriors, which, Jeff and Lisa King were part of that team as well. So they've known that disappointment before, and they especially don't, you know, want it to happen again. And if they can impart to the new players that they have on the team what that feeling is like, it might increase their chances of winning. But, Coach Terry said, you know, Boston is a different animal. It's hard to find a weakness. Certainly, you know, organization-wise, it's not a weakness. Roster-wise, it's not a weakness. They have all the athletes they need. And, you know, and of course, as Terry mentioned, and you too, Oscar, you know, with a team like St. Louis, you know, the roster size is their weakness. St. Louis is literally, you know, like 10 to 12 athletes away from, you know, having a dynasty type team. Right. And I think the Cali War very much, they understand these things. Right. And so they've added roster and they've developed, the athletic talent. But their weakness really is the disparity of their players across a very large region. And they don't all get to practice at the same time. In fact, in our first or maybe second interview of this season, Oscar, Amber Marcucci, when you interviewed her, she had mentioned how it was difficult, practicing for the War because not everybody could show up all the time.
Yep,
and so that's Cali Ward's thing. If they can solve that problem, then we definitely will be talking about having, you know, competitive championship games, you know, between the War and Boston or Pittsburgh, or you know, for years to come. I think because they have everything else.
It's going to be an interesting race in terms of the left coast as to who shows up to be the actual runner up, right, to face, which I think on the East Coast, the only saving grace or, you know, the only team that we can put our hands on right now in terms of the East is Pittsburgh. Can Pittsburgh somehow, you know, beat Boston in the playoffs, right? Because that's the only time. Even if they lose in the regular season, can they beat them in the playoffs? And that's the big if. We anticipate Boston to arrive there. And we don't know, like Terry's point, the shuffle will be on the other side as to who will show up to compete against them. Terry, I know you don't want to talk about your former team, but Mile High does have an opportunity to run the table here, but there are some intangibles from what I can see right now. New Mexico, pretty well good team the last 2 weeks. Rocky Mountain, a very good team as well. They get Nevada at the end, so Nevada could be a lot better team. They get Dallas this May 13th, this coming week. Dallas, we know, is not elite, as their name would claim. And Mile High would be at this point, could run the table, but there's some, you know, there could be some obstacles here, even though we didn't see that at the beginning. But, you know, give credit to New Mexico and Rocky Mountain.
Yeah, well, I have the inside scoop with them also. I have at least one coach on that staff that is still a friend of mine, and we talk, and so I have a little bit of insight with that team. So what I would say is my preseason prediction for the Mile High Blaze, my former team, was they would go 4-2 with their only losses to Nevada. What I didn't know was that Nevada would lose their best athlete to a really bad leg fracture versus Mile High, along with losing, you know, two of their best athletes, Jesse Felker and Jasmine Plummer. So they've lost so many athletes that the coaches have really had to think outside the box about how to, you know, play competitive football and move the ball with losing those athletes. Unfortunately, that's caused Nevada to be a lower – how do I say this? I love Nevada, so I'm not trying to be, you know, harsh. But
I think downgrading
they're not as competitive.
Nevada this season to a D2 would be just the ideal, you know, right? That would be ideal to say, you know, Nevada is a D2, just, more of a true D2.
Realistically, they are. You know what I mean? I mean, their coaching is D1. Their coaching is pro level, but just their the talent that I've seen this year with their team, unfortunately, isn't pro level. And so that's resulted in them having, you know, some not as competitive games they should be versus pro teams. So because that's the case, me saying Mile High goes 4-2 with losses to Nevada no longer is the case because Nevada is not as good as they have been in the past. Which makes, like you said, a pretty clear path for Mile High to finish 6-0 and obviously be in the playoffs. Now, what you said about the New Mexico team and the Thundercats, I think that sounds good on paper, but those teams aren't in pro for a reason, and I don't expect those games to be competitive. So we actually, my team, the Denver Bandits, played the Rocky Mountain Thundercats in a preseason game, and so I actually got to see them play, and I was impressed with their defense. Their defense actually gave us some problems in the first half, but their offense not so much. So I think because they don't play high quality football on both sides of the ball, that will result in Mile High, you know, having a pretty decisive victory. And so I think Mile High won't struggle with either of those teams, unfortunately. And so they have a pretty clear, unless Nevada can upset them at the end of the season in Nevada, that's pretty much the only thing stopping them from finishing 6-0.
All right. Mark, Terry, let's go into week 4 for the fans. Pittsburgh, Boston, do we circle Boston? Are we all in agreement at this point, or do we get the shocker?
Yeah. We're circling Boston until further notice, at least for me.
Yeah. I know Mark is because he's a fan.
I'll circle Boston. I'm also a bit, you know, in terms of, in regards to Pittsburgh, a bit nervous from the highlight reel. I saw that Marcelina Chavez, who started the game at quarterback, had come out of the game for reasons unknown. And I presume that it's an injury because we didn't see her go back into the game, either at quarterback or any other position, which she could play. She could lineman a wide receiver, and she could run the ball too, and presumably play defense, like defensive back or something. But I didn't really see her on the field, so I'm worried that she's injured. So that takes a very potent weapon away from Pittsburgh if she can't go. Now, as far as the quarterback position goes, you know, Cincy George did step in, and she looked like her old self. She, you know, she led the team, was able to throw the ball, and she ran for two touchdowns in that game against Tampa. So certainly Pittsburgh will be in capable hands no matter who's under center when they face Boston. But to lose the caliber of a player like Chavez when you're going up against your biggest opponent is a bit concerning. So, Boston has perhaps a bigger edge if Chavez is not part of the game plan for Pittsburgh.
Mark, this is George's moment because she faced them last year, right? So it's another opportunity for her to shine and see what she can do against Boston. And this is the benchmark. So this would be her moment. And I think the last year was in Boston, right, where she fared pretty well. They just, you know, they ran off with it late in the last two quarters, but she did fare pretty well for the first half. So an opportunity for George and Fatale, right, to try to make an impact once again against Boston.
Yep, and Malarski's been great as a wide receiver. She's really developed into quite a weapon. And, you know, they have other folks who can run and catch the ball too. So, and their defense is pretty tough. So, you know, I expect to see, you know, a hard-played game. Expect Boston to win by at least a couple touchdowns. But, you know, this is a Pittsburgh team that is getting better, to my eye anyway. So I'm very excited to watch this game.
All right, Terry, let's move to WNFC because we got 30 minutes and we really want to dive into the WNFC. So, Terry, let's start with your game. We said a big hurdle for Denver. Offensively, they've looked better every week the last 2 weeks, just not good enough to beat Texas. But they have improved offensively in a lot of ways the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Trying to decide what I want to say publicly. So the final score was 34-6. When there's about 5 minutes left in the game, the score was 27-6. And I was thinking to myself, man, if the final score is 27-6, I'm okay with that because 27 would be the least points that Texas has scored this year. And obviously anytime you can score against Texas is a good thing. Well, Texas wasn't satisfied with the score 27-6. So they proceeded to leave their starters in and throw the ball every play because they wanted to score one more time. So that's how the score ended up 34-6, which, you know, I have certain feelings about that. But, you know, it also, if you can't stop it, you know, it is what it is. So final score was 34-6, which looks like it's a pretty decisive victory. What I'll say is Texas didn't play their second string very much. So since they did play their starters in the fourth quarter, most of the fourth quarter on offense and defense, I think that's a testament to how hard Denver did play. And so if you actually watch the game, which unfortunately most women's football fans don't watch these games, if you actually watch the game, you'll see that in the first half it was 7-0 before halftime. And if Maria Jackson doesn't pull away for a long gain to the 4-yard line, there's a very good chance the halftime score is 7-0 Texas. So my point is that we played good defense. We were able to hold their ground game to, you know, not go crazy like they do versus other teams. And they still passed the ball well. You know, they countered what we were doing on defense and were able to connect on some slants and bubble passes and some short stuff and turn them into good gains. So they're obviously coached well. And they earned the victory. But I think if you dig deeper and if you actually watch the game, you'll see that Denver played some really good defense, made Texas earn every point that they scored. And I'm proud of that. I mean, there's no, you know, moral victories, but I think Texas, you know, was agitated with how the game went and what the score was. And for me, that's kind of a win. And so, you know, they won, and hopefully we can finish the season strong against Utah. But that's the first time we've played Texas, and so that was a different experience for me. And so, you know, you got to give them props. They're undefeated for a reason. They've never lost for a reason. And they're the team everybody's trying to catch, just like Boston. But now that I've played them, I know what to expect in the future. And so hopefully we get another crack at them down the road.
Terry, impressive 2 weeks for you guys because you guys played very tough against Mississippi, tough against the Texas Spartans, right? Now you got to finish with your rival, right? And they just barely got out of San Diego with a one-point win. So
yes, they did.
If you're Denver, you got to feel good. Your chances are good because your defense is almost as good as the Rebellion. And if somehow the Rebellion doesn't make some, you know, some one bad mistake, couple penalties, if they had curved that, they probably would have won the game against the Falcons. So that, you know, Denver,
Absolutely.
Utah. It's going to be a really big game. You guys have 1 week to kind of heal up and scope them out. And so we already know that the triple option is coming for you. It's going to be a matter of, you know, how you can contain them. But this is going to be a big matchup May 20th to finish the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I've already started, since I'm the scout guy for Denver, I've already started to watch Utah film. And, of course, I watched the game against San Diego that just happened, that they won 22-21. I watched it in its entirety. So, I mean, shout out to them. They're undefeated. I mean, you know, we saw Denver be undefeated last year, and there was a lot of ugly wins, but they were wins. And so that was a ugly win by Utah, but they won the game fair and square. So if you watch the game, once again, most people don't watch the game, but I do. If you watch the game, you see that San Diego literally threw a touchdown pass to Roberson to win the game at the end of the fourth quarter. And unfortunately, she dropped that one. And so if she catches that pass, San Diego wins the game. I think she scored 3 touchdowns in the game, so she was the star of the game. And unfortunately, she just needed to make one more catch to win it, and she dropped that one. And so it's a tough break for San Diego, obviously fortunate for Utah. But to Utah's credit, head coach Jasper Horn made a ballsy call. When they scored in the fourth quarter to make it 20-21, he made the decision to go for 2, and that could have backfired.
Why not, Terry? You got Tella. Why not?
Yeah.
That was the right call.
Yeah.
You got Tina Tella.
Yep.
You're not going to stop Tina Tella at the 2-yard line. I don't care who you are.
Yep.
It's
he
very
called
tough.
The same play twice. Yeah, he called the same play twice in a row, and he was 2 for 2. So, huge props to him for having the balls to make that call. And I'm happy for them that it worked out for them. But more importantly for us, you know, we're in a situation where if we beat Utah, we're in the playoffs, in my opinion. If we don't beat Utah, depending on how the game goes, you can make the argument that we still have a chance to make the playoffs. But the only thing we know is if we beat them, we're in. And so it's a tall task. They're undefeated for a reason. It's going to be a really tough test. Utah's different with Jasper at the helm instead of Rick. And they have a more balanced offense. And so that just gives us more things to plan for and, honestly, more stress on our coaching staff to try to guard more things than just the triple option. And so we have our work cut out for us for sure.
Mark, this game really is defining Utah like last year where they were getting and they were winning. And then we got to the final outmatched. Because they were basically competitively edging teams in small quantities. So this year it's like the only large amount of game was on the road against Oregon. Every other game has been 26-8, 19-0, 20. So they're not offensively, they're not mustering more than 20 points, and that's not going to cut it if you're going up against a Texas. Probably not going to cut it if you're going to go up against a Mississippi. You know what I'm saying? So the scoring part, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's that's got to be something we got to worry about, that if you're Utah. On the other side, Mark, ATL, wake up. Welcome to the real dance. And, you know, defensively they played a good game. But offensively they had never met anything like Mrs. Mallory on the Panthers line. And that was a struggle for them. The Mississippi D really, overpowered. This was not, your Avengers. This was not your Philly Phantoms, right? Offense. This was Gore and company. And the defense also stepped up their game. So, you know, they get the win 7-6 Mississippi, but I think this was a wake up call for Atlanta.
Oh yeah. It was definitely a smell the coffee, kind of game for Atlanta. When you win big against, kind of lesser opponents, you know, it can give you a false sense of yourself. Right. And so they learned. Hopefully they learned that lesson in taking this L against Mississippi, who is by far the toughest competition that they've faced so far this year. Atlanta's faced Tennessee, Florida, and Philadelphia, arguably the three weakest teams in the entire league, not just like the, you know, Atlantic Conference. Next they get Washington Prodigy, so that's going to be a tough game too. So I think the Prodigy definitely have some, you know, hopes building that they might be able to overtake Atlanta in this next game, given that, you know, the Panthers were able to manage that victory. But wow, what a tough game though, right? 7-6. That's a lot. That's a lot of defense right there. And you know, the Panthers' defense is kind of overlooked because of their flashy offense. But we've already seen it a couple times that, you know, their defense is very tough. In their week two game against Washington Prodigy, which was another kind of low scoring game, that was a slugfest, and the Panthers' defense did just enough to win that game, and it was tough. So I think we knew that they were ready for that Panthers defense were going to be ready for this Atlanta Phoenix team.
Mark, if you're trying to contain Jakir Mallory, Kamisha Andrews, Lashandra Williams, Ida Edwards, can I go on? I'll just go down the list. Jakir Mitchell, right? Can I go down the list? Mary Woodward, who was here last week on the podcast, and she said, they haven't seen us. They don't know us. They haven't anything like
us. She did say that.
And so guess what? You get out of the ATL with a 7-6 victory. And if you're Atlanta right now, you're scoping Prodigy. And if you're the Prodigy, right, you got a weak animal over here that just faced a very competitive team. They're coming off a beatdown type of I wouldn't say beatdown in terms of a score, but in terms of a physicality game, right? If you're Washington, mm-hmm. you got to bring physical and see if they're going to be competitive enough. But this is a great matchup. Washington against Atlanta, probably a must win for Atlanta, given the loss against Mississippi versus that. Where Washington, not so much. They still need to win, but I don't think that's a must win for them to kind of get into the playoffs. But for Atlanta, this is a different aspect for them because now they got to face somebody that wants to get in the playoffs that did not make the playoffs last year, right? So this to take down Atlanta is my point. Washington really needs to do that to kind of make a statement in the East.
Oh yeah, I mean if that and that would be a huge statement as to like who's the top dog in the East, right? That would be a massive changing of the guards. Should Washington be able to overtake Atlanta and, be the top seed coming out of the Atlantic and into the playoffs.
Terry, where do you see San Diego? Is L.A. a trick game for them? They lose a winnable game, like you said, a drop pass, and they win it. They didn't get it. They get beat by Utah. Now Los Angeles... Mm-hmm. Somehow, I don't know what happened to them, energy drinks or something, because they put up 42 points last week against Seattle, of all teams, right?
Well,
so I don't know what happened there in terms of offense, because it was dormant for, 6 weeks, and all of a sudden, or it's either Seattle very bad on defense. So it's, we got to give credit to the legend somehow, but they're going up against San Diego. Is this a trap game for San Diego is my question.
Yeah, so I think the easy pick for game of the week is going to be Atlanta-Washington. But the sleeper pick for game of the week is going to be San Diego versus L.A. because if you look at history, L.A. always gets up to play San Diego. L.A. is coming off, like you said, scoring 40-plus points last week. Now, the answer to your question about how they scored that many points, it's both things. It's that they're figuring stuff out on offense, and they have some good athletes. But also, unfortunately for Seattle and Scott McCarron, they've had the worst luck in the WNFC when it comes to injuries this season. So, defensive captain, linebacker April Arnold broke her arm when she played here in Denver, which was heartbreaking. I mean, you don't want to see injuries in general, but especially her being a captain, it's just so deflating for their team. So they've had more more injury bad luck since then. And so it's gotten to the point now where Seattle's a good coach team, but they've had so many injuries that it's just handicapped what they can do on the field. And so that's what I would attribute to why L.A. was able to score that much. And so it's a little bit of both, right? It's a little bit that they are figuring stuff out offensively, but also, unfortunately, Seattle is just injury-riddled on defense, and so that makes things easier. So that's how that is. But it's an intriguing matchup. Like, if San Diego overlooks L.A., L.A. can definitely beat them. If San Diego shows up to play and doesn't overlook them and plays hard and doesn't, you know, just plays them like they should, then I think San Diego should win, but there's no guarantee. I mean, L.A. is definitely going to come to play, so I'm very interested to see how it goes.
Mark, if you're Los Angeles, you got nothing to lose, right? You just got to be able to disappoint somebody else. You got nothing to lose. You come off a 40-burger against Seattle. If you come in here, your rival, East, you know, California rival, you know they need this win, right? More so than you do now. So if you're LA, like Terry says, you're coming up, you're umping your game here to beat a playoff team that's probably in a chase for the Nine Cup.
Right. You know, Los Angeles is positioned to, you know, be a spoiler to their two biggest rivals, San Diego, right? They're sort of like their Southern California rival. The team that, you know, is oh so great, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then in the last week of the season, Las Vegas, who they always seem to, you know, have competitive games with. So now Los Angeles might not be able, I don't know. Well, we'll see. But, you know, if San Diego takes a loss to the Legends, you know, it definitely puts their, you know, playoff position. It definitely impacts their playoff position, I think. And of course, Las Vegas is going to be fighting for just to get into the playoffs. So the Legends could play a spoiler in the last week of the season if they can find a way to beat the Silver Stars.
What a season for them, Terry. If LA takes down San Diego and Vegas, that would be a season.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Right? To finish the season,
yeah.
They don't go anywhere,
but they
play spoiler 2 weeks in a row. Wow. If you're the Legends listening to us, that's what we want, just so you guys know. That's what we want.
That's great TV. What it reminds me of, Oscar, I think you guys are all NFL fans. So do you remember when the last game of the NFL season when the Lions played the Packers and they interviewed head coach Dan Campbell after halftime and they said, hey, you have this opportunity to be the spoiler and possibly prevent the Packers to go in the playoffs. So do you have anything to say about that? And he simply said, yeah, we don't want them to go. And I love that he gave that real answer. You know what I mean? And so that's what made me think about it when you guys were talking about L.A. playing San Diego. So, you know,
they got nothing
we'll
to lose, right?
Out, but it's
technically, right now,
yeah.
They got nothing to lose. They got nothing
Amen.
To lose but play strong, good, solid, get two wins, and go into 2024 with a positive, where the other teams plenty to lose, right? Vegas has struggled. Oregon, not a match for them, but they've struggled against everybody else. You know, Utah, Denver, right? So, you know, it's great that you put up 26 points against Oregon, but it's kind of the equal to the 42 that LA put against Seattle in a lot of ways. So,
yeah,
you know,
well,
you can't
– I would take it a step further. I would say that if LA can finish the season on a three-game winning streak, in my opinion, they can sneak in the playoffs. Because if Denver beats Utah, we'll be 3-3 with a good shot at the playoffs. So if they finish with three wins, obviously they're 3-3. So I don't see why they couldn't jump. Because right now, we've already talked about the playoff scenarios. You know, it's Las Vegas, Denver, and Houston, in my opinion, that are vying for those two wild card spots. So if Houston's in, let's say Houston's in, then it's just Denver or Las Vegas. Well, the only way that can change is if LA does beat San Diego and Las Vegas, which could happen. I mean, that's not unrealistic. And so that would be an amazing story if it happens. So they got to beat San Diego first, but I can't wait to see it.
So, Mark, if you're Las Vegas, you got a problem. Week one, you got a win. Week two, you got a loss. Week three, you get a win. Week four, you get a loss. Week five, you get a win. And then, ooh, looks like week six or the last week of the season could be a loss based on your pattern.
Oh, yeah, man. That's pretty rough. Yeah, it looks like Las Vegas has a problem here.
So if you're the Lopez sister and Mariah Lopez and sisters here, given the pattern of wins and losses, May 20th looks like it could be a loss. So unless they prevent that, LA's got nothing to lose here. So, wow. Start looking at that. That's pretty consistent, trying to get an L at the last week of the season.
It is. Las Vegas has got to break that pattern, you know, and if they are going to go into the playoffs, you know, they'd like to be, you know, any team would like to be on a winning streak, right? Maybe they can string together two wins to break that pattern. So, but we'll see. We've got another week to wait. And, but yeah, the Silver Stars better be, I think they should be spending their bye week getting some extra preparation in there for the Los Angeles Legends, definitely.
Terry, Houston, three-game slide. They get the win against Kansas City. Kansas City offensively anemic in the last 3 weeks. They started pretty hot in the beginning of the season. Now they've slid. Mm-hmm. If you're Houston here, you really needed that win against Kansas City, and somehow they just gave it to you. I mean, I wouldn't say it was an easy win, but 14-8, and they couldn't muster anything offensively either. But, I mean, you get the Trojans here. You can finish with the two-game winning streak, and you're going to be basically, 3-3 as mm-hmm. well? So you have an opportunity there as well to try to, like, make a case for a playoff run. And then given the strength of schedule and the rankings, I mean, they play pretty tough. You know, their schedule is tough. Mm-hmm. Denver, Texas, Mississippi, Texas, right? So,
yeah.
You know, if they go 3-3, they might get an edge to just get into the playoffs. And, you know, and that would be impressive for a first-year team.
Very, yeah. And shout out to Houston. I mean, our former quarterback, Torrey's over there. I'm a big fan of her. And, I'm a fan of their ownership group. I mean, I like them in general, really. And so I'm really stoked. Because from my perspective, they have secured a playoff spot. Like, they're high enough in the mm-hmm. rankings where if they beat Kansas City, that pretty much punched their ticket. Because no offense to Tennessee, but them being a first-year team, them and Houston isn't like a fair matchup. You know what I mean? Houston's more established. They have more athletes. They have a bigger roster. They have more talent. Like, the list goes on and on. So I think it's fair to assume that Houston will beat Tennessee. No offense to Tennessee. And that will solidify them going 3-3. Denver, on the other hand, has to beat Utah, which is a top four or top five team in the league, to get us to 3-3. So we have a much harder road to get that done. But we have nobody to blame but ourselves because we lost to Houston in week one. And so, you know, there's no pity parties. Like, we just have to take care of business.
Terry, you did say at the beginning of the year, you said this is a big game for you, for Denver, right? That if they mm-hmm. won that, it was a factor in the end, right? And this is where we're at. It could have been a factor in the end, you know? And here we are. But you know what? Houston's played the tougher schedule. You know, I'm on the WFRC, you know, rankings, you know, team. And, I mean, the Central is a tougher schedule. So, you know, mm-hmm. to me, it's just they're higher ranked. I would rank them mm-hmm. higher because they did play the tougher schedule. And the Central Division is the tougher schedule.
Yeah, we talked about that in our private chat, me and Holly. And she made a good point that, like, you know, Denver finishing their season against Mississippi, Texas, and Utah is brutal. But
mm-hmm.
Houston has the unfortunate schedule that they play Texas twice. And so, mm-hmm. you know, Kansas City and Houston both playing Texas twice is just not a good time. You know what I mean? Like, we played them once, and that was stressful enough. I can't imagine playing them twice. That is more difficult, and it balances out, like, because you could say that Seattle is more competitive than Tennessee, but it doesn't matter because playing Texas twice is just a grueling thing to do. And so I can't argue with that a team like Houston does have a stronger schedule than Denver just because playing Texas twice is brutal.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of, you have to weigh the strength of schedule in that sense because literally the difference there. Mark, mm-hmm. we got 5 minutes. So we got key games for week 7, WNFC. Let me see here. Maybe it's – oh, I forgot to bring in Nate here. Sorry, Nate. I'm always lagging behind here on the switchboard.
No worries.
We got key game. Key games coming up here this week. So we got 5 minutes. Let's give our take here. Let's go, Nate. Will LA upset San Diego this weekend?
Yes. Yes. I'm going to say yes because they want to play spoiler.
Okay. All right. Terry, LA upset San Diego?
Oh, man.
Come on, Terry.
I wasn't ready for that question. I'm going to play
this
it safe and say San Diego will.
This is LA versus San Diego.
I'll say San Diego will win, but I would love to see LA win. I would love to see it upset. Okay. So.
Mark, San Diego, LA.
I'm going to play it safe like Terry. I just sort of feel like if one player on San Diego has a good day, it's probably going to be enough to beat the Legends. So I'm going to take San Diego. Not that I wouldn't like to, see an upset happen. Love a good upset.
Okay, San Diego, myself. Nate, we have 3 minutes, so let's move it. Atlanta, Washington, who do we take?
It's tough.
That is tough. but I'm gonna say the Prodigy.
Okay, you got Washington. Terry?
Washington.
Washington. Mark?
I'm also going to take Washington.
I'm going Washington. I don't know. Unanimous. If ATL is listening to us, they're probably going, what? But we're going,
yeah.
Yeah.
They're mad.
Come into play. Let's go. All right, and then let's finish up here we have 2 minutes. Terry, Houston, Tennessee. Did they get the dub?
Houston.
And they punch their ticket to the playoffs?
Yes, sir. Houston.
Houston. Nate?
Yeah, for sure, Houston.
Yeah, I'm thinking Houston, too. So there we are. So that's the three games we're going to be paying attention to. Definitely going to have a lot of popcorn for LA, San Diego, and definitely a lot of popcorn for Atlanta, Washington. So I could have a tummy ache by the end of the night, but that's how it's going to be, right? but overall, a great week 7. Then we got Pittsburgh, Boston. We had Houston, Minnesota over in the WFA Pro. So, all right, for the option, Holly Custis, Mackenzie Brooks, for the clan here, we're going to see you guys next week, episode 447. And are we going to get the Shocker in L.A.? We'll find out. And then are we going to get the Prodigy to win an ATL? So it's going to be an interesting matchup. W score, that's where you want to be, WNFCfootball.com. All right, Terry, Nate, and Mark, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. Catch you guys next week.
Peace.